The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Coming up this week on the Coors Life Podcast, our front nine gets going with the Valero Texas Open. I walk with two PGA Tour pros in the field and take you behind the scenes, plus a dramatic finish there in San Antonio. And at the LPGA's match play slash stroke play event, Nelly Korda reigned supreme again. Not a broken record, a true thing that happened. We get into that golf news, plus a teenage phenom joining the show from the women's game, talking about Mia Hammond. She made LPGA Tour history last summer, and she has a lot more in store for 2024. Really cool conversation coming your way. Plus, we're talking about the eclipse here in Texas, baseball, and when we always end with food, it's Ballpark Food Creations. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. We love Desert Fox Golf every single week of the year, but especially during Masters Week. We'll get into all the Masters coverage from Augusta, but just know that as you're enjoying the Masters, the team from Desert Fox Golf is still working hard to give you the best golf cart accessories to add your golfing experience, from the phone caddy to the towels and the tumblers, the swing aid tumblers, the cigar holders, and the upcoming DJ 10 speaker. They basically do everything for the golfer throughout every season, no matter what major or what tournament is going on. They offer great supplies and products for you at DesertFoxGolf.com. They're our friends of the show and a longtime sponsor of the Coors Life, so be sure to give them a like, a subscribe, and support their content as well, and check out DesertFoxGolf.com.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be here with you again and presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. I'm Michael. He's Alex. And Alex, welcome. Welcome in here to Butler Cabin. And it's that time of year again when we all come together in Augusta, Georgia for the Masters.
Love the way you hit those syllables hard, just like the legend Jim Nance himself. It is Masters Week. Wasn't quite ready for the intro, but you reminded me. It's the beautiful soliloquies. It's the birds chirping that may or may not be artificial noises. It's the most beautiful flowers, sounds, sights, and smells and tastes that you can get from any concession in sports. And it's the most beautiful setting for the first major of the year, Masters Week. Very much here.
It is indeed. Before we get to talking about everything going on at Augusta and some of our picks and sleepers as well, let's talk about the Valero Texas Open, just down in San Antonio, a few hours from you, Alex, because Akshay Bhatia took the W, winning in a playoff, and notable because Bhatia was in the drive, chip, and putt competition a number of years ago at Augusta and becomes the first player to return as a member of the field for the Masters.
Great shout out there. Yeah, that's an interesting Masters transition and segue for this week. And we've got a little bit more on the drive, chip, and putt coming later in this episode as well. But Bhatia, yeah, as a kid, participated in the Nat, and now he's getting into the Masters for a really great reason. He friggin' won the week before when he had to deliver an impressive major championship-like performance. He did, and it was rocky because he had a gigantic lead on Sunday that slowly withered away. It was one of those things where you wanted to tune out and just give up on the event, but Denny McCarthy delivered the heater of a lifetime to force a playoff that Bhatia eventually won. And so it looked like it was going to be one of those blowout tournaments where you could turn your TV off and shut your phone down, but it was far from that. It ended up being a thrilling Sunday finish.
Yeah, it was an emotional win for him as well, and he gets to return to Augusta. That's all that really matters.
That's right, yeah. And I mean, he's a cool little guy. You know, everyone kind of knows him. He's got that lanky frame to himself. He's a tall lefty that hits the ball a mile. He's got a fun personality. He's very open on social media, and he's part of that next generation. You know, we're reminded of just how young and spry he is. So definitely a guy we're going to see as a fixture in major championships and PGA Tour events for years to come. Shout out to Bhatia for getting it done in San Antonio.
So what was it like while you were down there for a couple of, for a little bit, for some practice rounds? You got to walk some holes with our boy Dylan Wu. What was it like down there in San Antonio?
It was cool. I got to walk the back nine of TPC San Antonio. So I met Dylan and his brother Jeremy there at the range. Got to walk the range, see everyone swing. Actually, forgot to mention this to you. Just chance bumped into Seamus Power as he was heading to the range and saw him. And we talked about our Ireland trip and reminisced on that for a few moments. So that was really cool to connect. And then, yeah, I walked the back nine with Dylan Wu and his buddy, Justin Lauer. You know Lauer because him and Wu played together last spring in the Zurich Classic, the two-man team competition, and collectively had one of their best finish on the PGA Tour together as a team. So they were excited to bring that together. In case you don't think those players out there on the PGA Tour might care about that Zurich event, oh, they do. Dylan and Justin were just talking about that all the round on a random Tuesday practice round. So it was neat to see them carve their way through the back nine, play some of the signature holes, and we'll definitely have a cool video following behind the scenes the entire nine holes as well.
Well, you know, now that there's no Dell match play, I feel like the team event at the Zurich is like the last best chance for alternative golf on tour.
Right. I know. Seriously. Yeah. It's like, you know, the alternative formats you and I, and I know a lot of the viewing can casual viewing audience would love to see in the game of golf. So hope cheers to more of that coming back in the future, but really neat following and looking forward to following their run up to the Zurich Classic here in the next month. I told them both, you know, hopefully I see them at big tournaments in the months to come this summer. Other surprise guest, which was really funny, which you'll appreciate, is a fellow Ohioan, in addition to Justin Lauer, was following for our nine holes. And I didn't realize who it was until about a hole and a half in. We were talking a lot of NBA, and then I realized under the sunglasses and the hat, it was Brian Windhorst, the ESPN NBA reporter who you see regularly on the desks for pre- and post-game shows. He's kind of known as the LeBron James expert that's been following LeBron since his days reporting in Akron. So it was really cool to pick his brain. Dylan's a big basketball fan. So we talked a lot of NBA with Windy, as the NBA fans will know him. So fun day out there on the course. Very cool to be inside the ropes and watch the pros prepare. The main takeaways that I got, Mike, are it's okay just to play nine holes. They just played nine holes. That was okay. It's okay just to play nine and hit more practice putts. Those guys made a habit of hitting practice putts to every single green, every single pin that they were going to see that week. So when in doubt, always hit a few more putts when you're practicing.
You know, putting wins championships. We say this over and over and over again. Putting wins championships.
Absolutely. You know, when you're out there in that weekly match with your buddy who may hit it a few yards further than you or may have a fancier, newer driver or newer this or that, that might all be fun and games. But when you get down to the green and you can make a putt in someone's face when it matters, that really is the full-on evening out point in the game of golf. So definitely drive for show, but putt for dough. And it was neat to see the world's best prepare and hit all the putts they did on the greens.
Speaking of the world's best, Alex, Nelly Korda has won four straight LPGA events, now winning the T-Mobile Match Play presented by MGM Rewards. We'll talk about why this event is dumb in a minute. But first, let's just say that this is this reminiscent for Nelly Korda now winning four, going four for four, of what she did in 2021. We need to remember, right, 2021, when she won four times and she won her first major and she won gold at the Tokyo Olympics. Now she's won four events. There is an Olympic Games coming up this year in Paris, and she is primed going into the first major of the season to win again.
Yeah, it's the heater of all heaters. And I think honestly, like, I wish it maybe came a little bit after the Caitlin Clark hysteria, because I think she's the female athlete that, like, we need to be devoting all our attention to, because what she's doing right now in the world of golf is unbelievable and definitely unheralded for sure. It needs to be getting more attention. Nelly Korda's won four straight times on the LPGA Tour. That's right. The LPGA Tour, the best female golfers in the world, are all collectively gathering at events all over the place. And it doesn't matter if it's stroke play or match play or a mix of both, or where it is, or how tired she is, or how much jet lag Nelly Korda has going through her system. She's still slogging her way to victory for the fourth time in a row, heading into the first major. it's perfect timing, and it's very reminiscent of that 2021 run, and maybe it could be even something more special later this year.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to say slogging out a victory. This seemed like a pretty easy trip for her through the match play, which was really 3 days of stroke, and then the last 2 days was the top eight players from those stroke play getting to do a match play. So they just do three rounds over 2 days. She was able to win over Angelina 3-2 in the quarters, and then win over Naren Ann 4-3 in the semis, and then went 4 up really early on Liana Maguire and just cruised the rest of the way to victory, winning.
Yeah, it was impressive and dominant. And you said that the weirdness of that format again just always strikes me. It kind of reminds me of the way that they varied the Dell match play format to make sure basically that they had every player in the field there for at least a few days. Cause you remember the old match play brackets used to be just straight up single elimination. So if you lost that Wednesday match, you went home on Wednesday and your trip was very short there. So I'm wondering if that's why they altered this format as well. So they make sure they keep everyone there for at least a few days for viewership and ticket purposes. But it just kind of defeats the purpose of calling it a match play event if, you know, less than half of the actual event is match play. So just a, I don't know, a little bit of a strange venue and mix between stroke and match play. But the Shadow Creek venue, undoubtedly an awesome course, regardless of what tournament they have there.
Was indeed. So we'll see if Nelly Korda can win a major coming up at the Chevron Championship in your neck of the woods there in Texas, and see what happens.
Yeah, also, I'm going to record next week's podcast from the Chevron Championship, actually, when we talk.
There we go. Also, we're talking about in the land of women's golf, the ANWA, the Augusta National Women's Amateur, was this weekend as well, getting us in the mood for the Masters. And three birdies in her last four holes, which was a pretty good finish, whether you're playing at the ANWA or the Masters. Lottie Woad took the W.
Amazing name, too. I just kept saying Lottie Woad all weekend as I saw her on the leaderboard. I was like, Lottie Woad, there she is. It's a very easy name to roll off the tongue, and it was nice to see her finish in style, like you mentioned, at Augusta National. This tournament's awesome. It reminds me of it every year. It's kind of nice now. It's basically this and the drive, chip and putt serve as kind of your first look. It's like Augusta has taken over a second weekend, like right below our noses without any of us even realizing it. I spent Saturday and Sunday watching Augusta National, and it wasn't even yet Masters week. So shout out to the ANWA for being an awesome Augusta finish. Candidly, I hope they just have the whole event there at Augusta and switch it from Champions Retreat. We'll see how that changes in the years to come. But like you mentioned, awesome finish. Finishing with birdies at Augusta National, core memory for life unlocked there for Lottie Woad.
It is indeed. Worth talking about the Korn Ferry Tour real quick, because they were here in the Savannah area for the Club Car Championship over at the Landings. And also worth noting, because a Georgia Southern alum, just an hour away from here is Georgia Southern, Stephen Fisk took the win in a playoff after also birdieing the three of the last four holes to get himself in position. The par five finishing hole at the Landings, this particular course they do at the Landings, is just a great finishing hole, par five along the marsh with the green tucked in to the right, where you got to go over a bunker and more marsh to get there, especially if you're going forward in two. It's a very difficult green to hit in two. And it's a fun course to walk around on too. It's beautiful there.
Love the low country marsh vibe. If people haven't seen a course along that coastline, it's just kind of a special type of look that's just discriminate to that part of the United States and golf architecture. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And good to see a local win, an Eagle from Georgia Southern winning locally in Savannah. I'm sure that meant a little bit more. And I know he probably had the boys there supporting him for the W. So that's always good when you get the boys there for a win.
LIV Golf was in action as well, as those guys tried to get themselves in final shape before we got to the Masters. Dean Burmeister took the W over Sergio Garcia in a playoff. Great. Two guys let either are washed up or you've never heard of playing against each other.
Dean Burmester not really moving the needle. But Mike, give me the what's the AK update? You know, we got to follow up on this Anthony Kim story, because he's like golf's Yeti. No one knew what the hell happened to him for a decade, and he just reemerged from the ashes with a gigantic check from Liv to start playing competitive golf again.
Yeah,
but I think he had a rough go out there this past weekend in Miami.
The good news is he finished 53rd out of 55 players.
Okay.
The bad news is one of them was Cam Smith, who withdrew after the first round. And also Ben Campbell, who is listed as having finished, but only played two rounds.
So I finished the leaderboard ahead of two guys, but I didn't necessarily beat them. That's the Anthony Kim report, sounds like.
Cam Smith went three over in his first round. Ben Campbell went even over the two rounds that he played. Anthony Kim went 21 over par.
Yeah.
And still was six shots clear of the guys in 51st.
That's not great. I mean, listen, I'm rooting for his personality and his electricity to bring some sort of fun, energetic, entertaining comeback to the world of golf stratosphere. But it doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon based off this play in the live events. So, yeah, that little bit of a bumbling start for Anthony Kim's return to golf.
Worth noting, we'll talk about this more in just a minute, but Brooks Koepka finished seven over par over his three rounds. Not ideal going into the Masters.
Okay, noted. All right.
Just going to say that out loud for you. Hey, let's talk real quick about what's up on our YouTube channel. There's your night golf in Florida is up there as well. There's also you from like an hour ago today, because we're recording on Monday, chipping in your backyard in darkness in the middle of the day, thanks to the totality of the eclipse that was going over your house.
Yep, I got totalitized by the eclipse here in Austin, Texas. Little touch and go. There was a little drama. So be sure to check out our YouTube video, Course of Life Podcast on YouTube. We'll have that video up for you right now. And you can see exactly what it was like to be in the path of totality right in my backyard. There were some strange things that happened. And yes, of course, while the whole world was looking up, I decided it was a great moment for some golf content, because, you know, that's what I do and that's my existence on this planet. So I wanted the moon and the sun to see that as well too during totality. So yeah, check out our YouTube page for the full eclipse video recap.
Can I share an unpopular opinion?
Yeah, tell me how much you care about the eclipse.
I don't understand the big hoorah. The big hubbub.
Yeah, the eclipse thing. I just don't get it. You know,
it got like a little dark here for a little bit. Like, just it's just like you looked outside, you're like, huh, it just feels a little dim. And, you know, so the moon moved in front of the sun. It happens every once in a while, you know. Whatever.
And now, see, you know what? I'm gonna sound like that elitist that like has had the Disney Fast Pass and ridden all the rides. And then I'm like talking to someone who hasn't gotten on their first ride of the day yet, where it's just like, I'm going to sound like an a-hole when I say this. Once you experience the total eclipse and you're really in the path of totality, then you get it. I do get it. I would say it met, but did not exceed my expectations for what would happen.
I think maybe the better metaphor for us to really be able to share is that maybe you being able to witness totality is what it feels like for your college sports team to win a national championship, right?
Yes.
Like just we are
on top of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, it's the best feeling in the world to know that your team won the NCAA men's Division I men's ice hockey national championship last year. I mean, that's the best feeling in the world to know your team did something like that.
Thank you for etching that in. I appreciate that. And the feeling was very similar. Like I said, I've been grasping at straws for just wins for anything. And the win of the day for Eclipse Day was basically that the clouds didn't get in the way. I got to see the full ring with the corona and all that jazz. So again, check out our YouTube for the full totality recap. And yes, a handful of chip shots in utter darkness in the middle of the day. It's cool stuff.
Well, friends, let's turn our attention back to Augusta, because it is the Masters. It is what, at least Alex, I think you and I believe is the best major in golf. There are some out there, including some greats in the game, who disagree with us. And you know what? They're entitled to their opinion, but they're wrong. So let's look at it and let's say who's, if you have to pick one person right now to win at Augusta this year, who's it going to be and why is it not Rory McIlroy?
Well, yeah, I mean, and the odds would tell you that essentially that this is Scottie Scheffler's Masters to win, that despite what you saw, you know, with the loss in Houston, he is still the best pick and the most primed player to win, who has also won recently 2 years ago at Augusta in 2022. 3-1 odds to win, Rory sitting back at 10-1. So just to give you an idea what that gap is in the odds makers frame of mind. So it's Scottie's tournament to win or lose first and foremost. I will not be picking Rory McIlroy for this Masters. I'm a fan and supporter of the idea of Rory McIlroy completing the Grand Slam at the Masters, and I would like to see it happen. I don't think current form and the cards at hand are going to allow him to play good enough golf to let that happen through 72 holes. So that's why I'm going to, if you're asking me to pick one person, it's going to be Scottie Scheffler versus the field, and I will be refraining from Rory this week.
Okay. So no Rory on your pick list. You know, this is obviously a field where there's going to be some guy who's going to make some run. Maybe we'll see Freddie Couples toward the top of the leaderboard on Thursday. He always doesn't seem to have it as often anymore as he used to, but he used to always just kind of pop up toward the top of the leaderboard for at least a little while. But I mean, give me a sleeper here. Do we think someone on this list could actually have a chance from toward the bottom to make a big move? And
maybe, really, I don't know. It's one of those courses where we always seem to gravitate towards players who have played well here in the past. Yeah. And there's a little bit of leaderboard gravity with guys that just, even if they're not coming in with great form, if they played well at Augusta in past years, they tend to find the form here. It just, it's a big time horses for course place. So if you want to go down at guys like that who are not in form but have played well at the Masters recently, if you want to scroll down, I mean, you could scroll down to Ricky Fowler at 75-1. The guy doesn't have any form right now, but he's played well at the Masters. He has a history of contending at this tournament. So if you're just laying a dollar on the long shot odds of him contending and that happening, that could be something to look at. I've seen Sepp Straka pop up on the leaderboard here. Justin Rose at 90-1 has popped up on Augusta leaderboards. He's come close here so many times. Keegan Bradley's shown his face at Augusta and has got a little Ryder Cup revenge maybe after full swing his errand to notch a big career-changing win. So yeah, if you're looking down the list, basically what you're doing is you're looking back at old Masters leaderboards and saying, you know, who finds a way to just consistently play well here? Let me give them a chance at long odds.
What do you think has a better chance of happening? Tiger Woods playing two full rounds of golf or Tiger Woods making the cut?
Yes. Well, I would say the odds are better of him playing two full rounds of golf. Okay, just first and foremost, but not by much.
Yeah.
And neither odds are great, to be honest. That's sadly the new quota that we're gauging this week. For reference, Tiger and Phil both going off at 100-1 odds to win, which I find a little comically sad at the same time. To see him that far down the list.
Tiger said that he was going to play one competitive tournament a month, and he's played one round in 8 holes since January.
Yes,
he did. That was a tournament, facts. One round and 8 holes. So, you know, this is not a good track record for Tiger. I'd be surprised if he makes it to the end of the day on Friday.
That's really the new quota is will he make the cut? Okay, let's figure that out. If he does, congrats to him and shout out to him. Now, next ladder is, will he finish 72 holes? Because we don't know that that's going to happen. He may have enough in the engine to make the cut and be 1 or 2 under through a couple rounds. That's very realistic. Mm-hmm. What will he do Saturday morning after 2 rounds in 2 days, making it 3 rounds in 3 days? You know, those are the things you're going to have to look at throughout the week. Weather's going to be decent enough, it seems, in Georgia. How's the Georgia weather doing recently? I know you're in a different part of the state than Augusta.
It's been beautiful. Down here, it's been beautiful, at least in the Savannah area.
He needs that. He needs no alternative conditions for the bad back. Yeah. We can't have anything adverse at all for Tiger this week.
My last player question for you about Augusta is, which of the LIV guys has the best chance to take the win here? Is it defending champion John Rahm? Is it The other major champion from last year, Brooks Koepka. Is it Taylor Gooch? Who's not even in the field, so it doesn't matter.
We start on Gooch. Yeah, I know. That was a whole word. I appreciate that little note. About Dustin Johnson at 33-1 odds. Mm. Again, just a mopey, vanilla ice cream, unenergetic personality of a guy that doesn't really give you much. But God damn it, he plays well at this course. He finds a way on this leaderboard at this course, no matter what form he's in. He's won here a few years ago. So that's a guy I'm looking at decent odds, 33-1 odds, definitely worth a look. I'm staying away from Cam Smith off that withdrawal last week.
Yeah,
a lot of people in the live circle are talking about Joaquin Niemann because he had a little bit of heater earlier this spring. Mm-hmm. If he could bring a little bit of that momentum, you could definitely see him towards the top of the board. He's had a good finish at Augusta before. So I'd be leaning on Niemann and Dustin Johnson if you're looking at live guys to contend this week.
All right. It's always worth noting also when we talk about Augusta is how it seems that it is like taking a step backwards in time. There are no phones out on the golf course.
Correct.
And the food still costs like a dollar.
Yes, it's amazing. Every time this menu goes by on social media, and we'll post it at some point on our Instagram at COL Podcast, they flash the menu. And like, you know, there's a lot of things that change in this world, Mike. There's a lot of prices that change in this world that aggravate me. But the Masters has done it right. They have kept prices earth-shatteringly low on their concessions for years, and it's stayed that way. Great tasting sandwiches, of which I sampled a few when I got there, coming in at no more than, you know, $2 to $3, maybe $4. Even your draft beer staying $4 or $5 or less. It's the dream concession stand you always wished you could see. And so it needs to be shout out that whatever you think of the Masters or Augusta National, just know their concession prices are absolutely on point.
All right, we'll have a recap of whoever does get to put on the green jacket on Sunday on next week's episode. But for now, friends, let's pull away from Augusta and let's get to this week's guest. This is the second youngest guest in the history of the show. The youngest, of course, being Sebastian Pell New England, who we all remember threw his club into the sod in the middle of his swing. But this young teenager made history last summer on the LPGA Tour at just 15 years of age.
Yeah, how about being 15 years old and making the cut and finishing in the top 30 in an LPGA event against the world's best? That
Pretty
was
good.
Impressive stuff from this week's guest, Mia Hammond. And she's got a fascinating story about where she sits in the golf landscape right now as a successful teenager. And there's a lot coming her way. But this was a really interesting conversation with potentially a name you want to get to know for the future of golf, and Mia Hammond. Next up, she is a teenage phenom and junior golfer that made LPGA Tour history with an unbelievable top 30 finish in last summer's Dana Open in her home state of Ohio, and she just received another huge honor as well, too. It's Mia Hammond joining us on The Course of Life. Mia, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. We'll get to your performance against the world's best on the LPGA Tour in a little bit. But first, the news that we just recently got is that you were selected to be part of the first ever USGA US National Junior Team. I'm curious, how did you hear the news and what were your thoughts when you first heard about that?
Yeah, so back in October, I had played in an event in Canada that was kind of a tester, I want to say. They had three of us selected, all from around the country, and it was honestly such a great week. I had so much fun with the two other girls that were there, and you know, we didn't hear much for a few months, and then a couple of weeks ago, I got a call from Coach Zambri saying, hey, would you love to be a part of the team? And you know, obviously, I couldn't turn it down. It's such an honor, and it's just, I'm so excited to get started with everything, considering my experience in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, repping your country is super exciting. I imagine that you've definitely seen things like the Solheim Cup and all sorts of different USGA match play, and I'm sure that's definitely something you're probably pretty excited to be part of, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I saw something interesting about how you grew up and first got into the game that was fascinating, that you actually grew up and learned a lot of your golf on a simulator. Tell everyone a little bit about your background and your favorite memories of learning the game growing up as a kid.
Yeah, so honestly, my memory is a little fuzzy, considering it was so long ago, but I do remember being really little and my dad used to practice in our basement on our simulator, and you know, I'd be down there with him, and I don't think I took it that seriously. But I would, you know, try to hit a few balls in the simulator and then go play with something else and then come back, hit a couple more balls. And then as I got older, I want to say I was 7 the first time I was on an actual course. Our home club at the time, Zanesville Country Club, didn't allow kids on the course until they turned 7.
Okay.
So I think that was when it truly picked up for me. And honestly, I think the interest truly came from my first tournament, really. There were 6 girls in the field and top 5 received a medal. And I was 6th out of the 5 people that got a medal. And I think that really pushed me from there forward. It was.
Wow. Yeah. That's definitely a blow in your first tournament like that. But I'm glad you took that as a point of adversity and turned it into a positive to motivate yourself to play a lot more. Did you play a lot of other sports growing up, or was it always just golf for you?
So I had started with softball. I want to say I was 5, maybe 4 or 5. I don't exactly remember which, but. And I want to say I was relatively good. Obviously, don't remember much. And then I was on a basketball team for a little while, just a local rec center team. And then when I was around 9 or 10, maybe 8, I started with gymnastics and was only with that for a couple of years. I had a lot of knee injuries actually when I was younger, and it kind of limited me. Golf is obviously a very low impact sport, and it's easy to, avoid injury with it. So I think that was honestly the turning point for me that made me focus just solely on golf, and you know, it's given me so much.
Yeah, it's very cool to hear about your journey, and your junior golf tournament success is very well known at this point. But I'm curious, is there a specific like junior tournament you won or a favorite that sticks out when you realize that, you know, golf would be your main focus?
You know, I wouldn't really consider it to be a tournament exactly, but my favorite win was definitely dry chip and putt a couple of years ago at Augusta National. That's, you know, it was truly, I think, my first time in front of crowds. And I remember on the very last stage, it was putting. We were the last group still competing, the oldest girls. And there were so many people surrounding that last screen. And it was just such a surreal experience hearing the people cheer for you. And it was truly incredible. But the first tournament I'd say that really made me realize I should truly focus on golf, I want to say it was a U.S. Kids tournament in Florida, the Holiday Classic. I believe they still have it every year in December. It was honestly considered my first big win at that time. And, you know, I was so excited and so happy to finally see my hard work paying off.
Yeah, that's a very cool win. And obviously, when you're winning a junior tournament in Florida, you're usually competing against a bunch of people that play golf year round. So that's very exciting for you from Ohio. I know how much that had to have meant to you. And mentioning Augusta National, I had to ask, was the course as beautiful and pristine as you remember? The one thing that struck me when I went there to the Masters, Mia, is how beautiful the course was in real life. It's even more beautiful than what you see on TV, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's no place like it. Every blade of grass is just cut perfectly. There's not a single thing out of place there.
Yeah, really cool experience with the drive, chip, and putt there. It's Masters Week as our audience is hearing this as well too. Again, Mia Hymn joining us on The Course of Life. So now tell me a little bit about kind of what the experience has been like. You mentioned crowds at Augusta National. Let's talk about LPGA crowds and specifically that week at the Dana Open. What was it like for you having crowds kind of watch your every move all week and living kind of that life for a week of what an LPGA tour player experiences?
Yeah, it was definitely something new. I know the night leading up to the tournament, I don't think I've ever been that nervous. I remember the first tee shot, like I was visibly shaking, honestly, I think for the first five or six holes.
it was hard to tee the ball up even.
Yeah, very difficult. But, you know, I, as the week went on, especially on the weekend, more and more people showed up. And on 17 and 18, the final round specifically, there were thousands of people, I feel like, behind the 17th and 18th green that were, you know, standing there watching. And I actually ended up birdieing the last two holes that day. And, you know, hearing people cheer my name and cheer for me, clap, it was just, it was truly amazing.
That's an awesome experience. And it had to be obviously neat from your perspective. I'm curious, maybe meeting other players out there on tour throughout the week. I'm sure you had some interactions throughout the week. Is there a favorite player or new LPGA tour friend that you made that week on the grounds?
I actually got to meet Lydia Ko on the range. She is super, super sweet. Actually, when I played my second LPGA event last year, she actually recognized me on the range and came up and talked to me. And then during the round, I was able to play with Weiwei Zhang, and she is so sweet. She actually played a part of my practice round at my second LPGA tournament with me. I got to play three rounds with her at the Dana in Toledo, and she was so fun to play with. She's such a happy person and just so easy to get along with.
That's awesome. Yeah, Lydia Ko, and you know, she's in a similar position to you in that she was playing in a lot of big time tournaments at a very young age. And we always joke on our show that it feels like Lydia Ko has been around forever, but she's still so young. So there's a lot of future for you and her for sure in the game. So that's awesome that you befriended her and she befriended you as well. So what, tell us in our audience a little bit about what the future looks like for your tournaments and what's kind of your game plan from a golf perspective for the rest of 2024.
Yeah. So I'm playing in a few junior tournaments coming up, and then I actually received an exemption back into the Dana this summer. I believe that's in the middle of July.
Awesome.
And then I received a spot into the Monday qualifier and the pro-ams for the ShopRite in New Jersey, the LPGA.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a tournament that's been around there for a long time. There's a lot of history at that event.
Absolutely. And then I'm going to try to qualify for the US Open and the US Am as well. Those qualifiers are actually pretty soon. And yeah, like I said, I think it's mostly junior tournaments, but they're mostly invitational tournament. And then I also received an invite to the Mizuho, which is where the AJGA plays along with the LPGA players on the course.
Oh, yes. Okay. Very cool. Is that where is that taking place? Is that in New York City area?
Yeah, it's in New Jersey. I believe Liberty National Golf
Club.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful course there with the Statue of Liberty in the background. Have you ever been to New York City before for a trip?
I have not. I'm super excited to see it though.
Nice. That's going to be a fun trip for sure. Everyone always remembers their first time in New York City. It's an awesome city to visit, and you'll be playing in a really cool event as well too. So that's what the future looks like. It's mia.hammond.18 on Instagram if you want to follow along with her journey as well too. Let's just do some quick shot questions, just some rapid fire questions for you, Mia. The first one is thinking about your home state of Ohio. What is your favorite golf course in the state of Ohio?
Zanesville Country Club, 100%.
Yep. Home course, loyal. I could see that. Nice. And would you prefer a course if it had tucked pins on every green or it had a water hazard on every hole? Which one would you prefer?
Probably tucked pins on every hole.
Yeah, just stay away from the water at all costs.
Yeah, definitely.
I just played golf in Florida and it reminded me how much water there is on the courses there. Gosh, it's brutal there. For Ohio golf, what do you prefer? I know the season isn't as long as you would like for it to be up there. Do you prefer spring golf or fall golf in Ohio?
Probably fall golf. I like when it gets a little cooler and the end of the year and doesn't rain as much.
Yeah, true. It's probably a little bit drier. All right, let's get to the food questions. We love to end all of our interviews with food. I did a little research to know that you're a big McDonald's fan. So tell everyone, what's your McDonald's order these days? What are you getting?
So I love to get a McGriddle in the mornings without egg. It is my go-to, my absolute favorite. And of course, I have to get a Coke with it. And for lunch, I love a McChicken with just mayo and cheese.
Okay, pretty simple order. So now let's think about something more elaborate for our 19th hole question. Let's say you get in like the clubhouse at Zanesville, or you just played a really good round and you sit down at the 19th hole. What's like your favorite meal and drink that you like to have after you play a round of golf?
A club sandwich and probably a Coke.
Nice. Sticking with Coke, regular or Diet Coke?
Regular.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, the club sandwich is tried and true. It's one of our most popular answers in the history of that question. So
yep. Can't go wrong.
Yep. You can't go wrong. Awesome. Well, Mia, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life. Excited to learn a little bit more about your story, and we're going to be following for all the tournaments that you play in this summer. Best of luck and hit them straight out there. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Course of Life podcast is brought to you by Zencastr. We've been using Zencastr here since almost the very beginning as how Alex and I record this podcast from hundreds of miles away. And it provides us with great quality audio that works every time. And it's something that makes Course of Life what it is and has kept us being able to make consistent episodes every week. And now it's super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. You log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. You record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. You feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. And have you ever wondered what you actually sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. Head on over to zencastr.com/pricing and use our promo code COURSEOFLIFE to get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same easy experiences we do for all of your podcasting and content needs. Again, that's zencastr.com/pricing and our promo code COURSEOFLIFE. Zencastr, it's time to share your story.
We're back. Great chat there with Mia. Alex, you know how I've been saying for some time now that there needs to be a women's Masters at Augusta in
yes.
the fall.
It's a long-standing take of yours.
We saw how beautiful this course was during COVID in the fall. It needs to happen. And Mia needs to be playing and maybe even one day winning this new fall women's Masters at Augusta National.
Yep, that's a great little crystal ball moment right there. And we're gonna run this tape back years from now when we're older and crankier. And Mia Hammond's putting on the, what's it going to be, teal? What color jacket are they going to go with for the ladies' Masters? That's the real question.
I think they can stick with green.
She'll be putting on the green jacket color. In Butler yeah. Cabin, just like the men's Masters Championship would. I appreciate that prediction. That is something fun to throw out in the cards. There's definitely a lot more that you'll hear about from Mia Hammond and her game. Like she mentioned, she's already getting exemptions into some other LPGA events. So you'll see her out on the LPGA tour later this summer. Definitely a name you want to kind of log down, Mia Hammond, and keep track of her career in the years to come.
And if you like that chat with Mia, plus everything else we do here on this podcast, make sure you punch that subscribe button on the podcast app you're using. Or if you're listening to us on YouTube, make sure you punch that subscribe button on YouTube as well, so you never miss anything that we do here. Check us out on Instagram. COL Podcast is the main podcast account. Course of Life. Alex is Alex. I'm at MWRIN. See, Alex is still on X, formerly known as Twitter, Course of Life 1. Of course, as we just said, we're on YouTube as well, Course of Life Podcast. So you can catch us there. as well. If you like food, and who doesn't, make sure you follow our food content on Always End With Food on Instagram as well. We'll talk food in a little bit, but first let's talk basketball. March Yes. Madness is coming to an end. The first weekend included kind of like, eh. The second weekend was fire, and this weekend kind of was eh again.
Yeah, that's a correct way to put it. But the roller coaster in defense of the bracket brought us exactly kind of like where all the fans want to be brought, which was two finals and two championship games on both sides featuring awesome one seeds that had been great teams all year. That's pretty much all you can ask for as a fan. So however busted your bracket was, and I know yours was just as busted as if not more busted than mine, we at least got some fantastic matchup out of it. And especially, I want to talk about the women's matchup. Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes against South Carolina, the undefeated South Carolina Gamecocks. That's about as great a stage as you can set for women's college basketball, and an awesome crescendo to the whole run up that the sport of women's college basketball has had this season.
I mean, Caitlin Clark, twice a bridesmaid, never a bride in the NCAA Final Four there, which is disappointing for her, but you know, her mark on the game is certainly something that'll be there for forever. And South Carolina just cementing the undefeated season and taking the win. And again, it just goes to show how strong women's basketball is, too. I think we all kind of forget it sometimes, even with a great player like Caitlin Clark. Women's basketball is a fantastic landscape of teams here. And any of them can win on any given day to a great extent now. This isn't about just UConn winning nonstop anymore like it used to be.
I appreciate seeing the diversity in the women's college basketball game. The game is so fundamentally flawless, which is awesome to watch. And Clark brings that kind of Steph Curry vibe to the whole thing. But what I'm interested to see now is what sort of lift she's going to bring to the WNBA. We've had extremely successful players in women's college hoops, like a Breonna Stewart or like a Sabrina Ionescu in recent years, that have made that leap to the WNBA. They've been stars in their own right, but can Caitlin Clark really bring it to the next plateau in terms of the WNBA's popularity? That's what I'll be watching. She'll obviously be the number one pick. Seems like she's going to the Indiana Fever. She's going to stay in the Midwest, it appears. So her journey just begins. Unfortunately, it does fall slightly short in the final in South Carolina, though. And shout out to the Gamecocks for the perfect 38-0 season. That should not be understated. I know it was kind of Caitlin Clark's season from the national news perspective, but 38-0, not to be understated.
Can we also just talk about real quick? We know Caitlin Clark is going to the WNBA, but I forgot to make sure we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but there is that $5 million offer from Ice Cube for Caitlin Clark to go to the Big Three League.
I wish she could do both, but she can't. The seasons kind of intersect. I was like, can she just do both? Or?
Ice Cube was saying they could make it work.
Honestly, it could probably just be a thing where it's like, I'll just be like in a guaranteed 2/3 of the games. And, you know, obviously there'll be scheduling errors with the rest of them. But that would be so funny to see if she actually took that agreement. I would kind of love it. I kind of appreciate her for just going and getting that money, girl. Like, while the oven's hot, you might as well. So interesting to see what choices and other random offers she gets in the future. I'm sure this isn't the last strange news story we'll see about an offer to Caitlin Clark.
All right, let's talk baseball, because the baseball season really kind of is in full swing now. We're a couple weeks in. And Alex, if you look at the standings right now, especially in the American League East, it seems like the clock has rolled back a number of years. It's Yankees and then Red Sox, and then quite a ways down, there's the Orioles, Rays, and Jays again.
We're doing this little thing where we're masquerading as a good team, even though I know that we're really not. They're going to reel me in, because this is the way the world works in sports. The AL West stinks. We've beaten up on the Mariners, the A's, and the Angels. Mike, have you seen the pictures of the Oakland Stadium for Athletics games? It is so sad with that team moving out. There's nobody there at all.
Literally nobody there. It is what the Athletics ownership has done to this team is criminal.
And they're going to go rot in a minor league park in Sacramento for a couple seasons before they move to Vegas. How horrible is that?
Let the Major League Baseball owners have allowed this to happen is just even worse, I feel like. It's just so sad. what's happened in Oakland. I feel so bad for those fans. I wouldn't want to play there either. So
yeah, Red Sox are bullying on some teams right now, but we're a little bit fraudulent right now. We'll see what happens when we actually meet our compadres in the AL East. But yeah, for now, the standings look nice for us in Boston.
Yep. The Yankees are just doing great. You know, we're 8-2. We're sitting pretty. We're playing good baseball.
We're pitching well.
Offense is hot. We're going all the way this year. So World Series or bust.
It's good to see baseball back on the screen, if nothing else. Yes.
Let's keep talking baseball, but let's do it as we hashtag always end with food.
Yep, at always end with food on Instagram. If you want to check out our food content, it's our 19th hole content to end the podcast where we talk all things food. We're back in the swing of baseball, and obviously the promotions are out for all of Major League Baseball, the clubs, the stadiums, and most importantly, the ballpark concessions. We love featuring all that's great and the latest and greatest in ballpark foods. Sent you over a piece, Mike, where it scans some of the highlights, but what took your fancy here for what's new in ballpark concessions in 2024?
I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff out there right now. There's the rainbow cookie egg roll at Citi Field, which is just sounds like a weird abomination going on there. Fenway Park, you got Irish nachos going on at Fenway.
Just really pandering to that Southie Irish St. Patty's Day audience there, heading to the ballpark for a game. That's a good pandering move by the Boston crowd. I got to note the Marlins $52 all-you-can-eat ticket right now. It's $52 all-you-can-eat. It includes the following: hot dogs and chili dogs, nachos, cheeseburgers, popcorn, peanuts, cookies, soda, and water. I got news for you. That's a great little assortment. I think you could try at least one of each and definitely make out with a little bit of profit for $52. That's not a bad deal, all things considered.
It's not bad. That's not bad at all. I also need to talk about what the Atlanta Braves are doing, this new four-bagger. Four hamburgers, 1 pound of brisket, Reaper pepper mayo, jalapenos, cheese, and beer battered onion rings. This thing is a heart attack and a half just staring at you.
Yep, that's scary. That's scary. I mean, I appreciate how much they're giving you, but there's also a moment when the like meat to bread ratio just doesn't work for the sandwich. We're in a stadium seating environment. This is a sloppy eat, that four bagger.
It's four separate burgers. This isn't like four burger patties and a pound of brisket. This is four separate burgers on the platter.
Insane. Fried food heaven there with the rings and fries. Really, the four bagger from the Braves. Love that. You can check out all that and more. Again, always end with food for our food content as well. I did a little Bucky's haul. Check out our food content there. Again, COL Podcast on Instagram. Be sure to follow the YouTube for that Eclipse video. And we thank you for tuning into this week's Course of Life podcast. We'll see you next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.